Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for this next hour, Ursula Rudenberg. I hope you're enjoying this beautiful spring as much as I am. I took a few bluebell baths in the woods. That's a walk through the beautiful bluebells. In this case, it was along the Skunk River in the North River Valley Park. But now the bluebells are already gone, along with some of the first fleeting spring flowers. I think the phlox are out now. If you're gardening, Saturday will be a great day for that. Partly sunny with temperatures in the upper 70s. And on Sunday and Sunday night, rain is expected, which will very nicely seal off your efforts. Sounds like a winning combination. Later in this hour, we'll hear from gubernatorial candidate Jake Porter, who is running as a Libertarian in the primary election on June 5th. And a very interesting group of Ames High students together with their teacher, Colin Reichert. And they'll describe their innovative work, which integrates science, learning, and community. Sounds like another winning combination, especially in the city of Ames, Iowa. Also in Des Moines, a lawsuit being filed regarding the new abortion law. So stay with us. But it's Friday, so here's Dennis Hart with the past week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
On Tuesday, the Ames Trib reported that the deadline to submit applications to hold a seat on the Ames School Board and replace former member Rodney Briggs is today, Friday. And as of Monday, no one had stepped forward to express interest in serving. Briggs announced his decision to resign from the board at the end of last month because he was moving to the Des Moines area, making him ineligible to continue serving on the board after being a member since 2011. The board decided to open up applications to the general public. The appointed candidate will serve until 2019, when Briggs' term expires, or until the next school board election, should one occur sooner. A candidate forum to evaluate applicants is scheduled for this coming Monday, May 21st at 6 p.m. at the school district office. If Briggs' seat is not filled by June 1st, the district will be required to hold a special election, which would cost about $15,000 from the district's 2019 general fund budget. Tuesday's Tribune also reported that school district representatives toured seven high schools this month as part of the beginning stages of planning for a new Ames High School. All of the high schools that were toured were in Minnesota. The group toured new and remodeled high school buildings of varying sizes. A bid for the Ames High project should go out by April of next year, with construction being finished by early 2022. There was more in Tuesday's Tribune, including word of a water main break on Monday on South Riverside Drive, just south of Lincoln Way in Ames. The broken 12-inch main caused standing water to inundate the grass around the break. The city estimated repairs would take up to 12 hours. Crews were using a backhoe to get mud and water out of the ground on the west side of the street in order to reach the broken main. The city said repairs could stir up mineral deposits in water lines around Ames, potentially creating rusty water that would not be dangerous, but which could stain laundry. Tuesday's Trib also reported that the Ames man accused of assaulting a woman and threatening to kill her in January was sentenced to 12 years in prison on Monday. 50-year-old Max Michael Gerber had pleaded guilty to willful injury and domestic strangulation. The victim told police that she and Gerber got into an argument when Gerber punched her in the head and then strangled her. There was also a report that more than 6 months after it was filed, the lawsuit between two Luther residents and the Whatcha Smoke and Barbecue and Brew restaurant had been settled. The lawsuit claimed that the restaurant was sitting on a residentially zoned plot of land and that the restaurant's septic tank was trespassing on private property. The settlement involved the restaurant buying the property for $145,000. The lawsuit was filed last October by Sean and Jacqueline McAllister. It claimed the owners of Whatcha Smokin' had encroached on their land by building a retaining wall on their property. They alleged that the septic tank and associated plumbing was located on the property and that it amounted to trespassing. Tuesday's Tribune also reported that construction crews were almost 3 weeks into building a new neighborhood on the eastern edge of Huxley. That project is expected to feature 38 new duplexes on a four-acre plot of land just east of First Street. The target move-in date for residents is spring of next year. Construction is also underway in another new neighborhood with 24 single-family homes just north of the duplexes. Move-in dates will vary. One more note from Tuesday's Trib. Grant applications for this year's Senior Variety Show proceeds are being received through June 1st. The Senior Variety Show has raised about $200,000 for Story County Senior Projects during its 23-year history. This year's show will take place August 17th and 18th at the Ames City Auditorium and will feature county seniors who are over the age of 60. Application forms for the grants can be found online at seniorvarietyshow.org. That's seniorvarietyshow.org. In Wednesday's Trib, an interview with Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst about a variety of issues, including her upcoming annual Roast and Ride fundraiser. Every year, that event includes a motorcycle ride honoring veterans, followed by a barbecue and political speeches. This year's event will take place Saturday, June 9th, starting in Des Moines, and then moving to the Central Iowa Expo in Boone. Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy of South Carolina will be the headline speaker. Ernst also talked to the Tribune about a variety of political hot-button topics, among them the recently passed state law that bans abortions once a fetal heartbeat is detected. Ernst said it was the right thing to do, no matter what happens to legal challenges against it. On Tuesday, representatives from Planned Parenthood, the American Civil Liberties Union, and from the Emma Goldman Clinic in Iowa City announced they are challenging the law's constitutionality. Ernst also commented on the nation's political divisiveness, saying, in her words, "What we have to do is respect each other and respect the fact that there are differences among us." She also said she and others would continue working with President Trump on the issue of tariffs, which would impact trade relationships with China. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, a feature story about the 50th anniversary of the Special Olympics, both nationally and here in Iowa. This year's event was set to begin yesterday, Thursday, with the torch run from Des Moines to Ames. The games will last through tomorrow, Saturday, and feature more than 2,600 athletes competing in 23 sports. 2,000 volunteers and 1,200 coaches will take part. Wednesday's Tribune also reported that a project to bring a new touch of nature to an Iowa prison, thanks to some Iowa State University students, is nearing its finish line. Over the past few years, landscape architecture assistant professor Julie Stevens has worked with students and with administrators and women at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville. The goal was to transform the prison's formerly barren acres into a green space, including outdoor classrooms, a healing garden and a vegetable garden, and more. And this spring, Stevens and her students set out to create a children's garden, a place where kids can visit their incarcerated moms. The dedication for that garden will take place on Friday, June 1st. Thursday's Trib reported that Iowa Republican Senator Charles Grassley said he sees no evidence of collusion between the Trump presidential campaign and Russia in the documents he released to the public on Wednesday. Grassley, who is chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said the June 2016 meeting between members of Trump's campaign and a Russian lawyer appeared to be, in Grassley's words, a bait and switch, and that members of Trump's team received no dirt on Democrat Hillary Clinton. Grassley told the Tribune that Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russia's possible interference in the 2016 election should continue to its end, and that President Trump should stop commenting on it. In addition to talking with the Tribune, Grassley also met with Ames Mayor John Hala and members of the city's Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday during the chamber's annual lobbying trip to the Capitol. Grassley said the group talked about workforce development and the need for workers in Story County. Grassley said the group also applauded his support of biofuels, of which Iowa is a large producer. Also in Thursday's Trib, word that the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission voted not to approve new zoning standards on any properties near Lincoln Way on Wednesday night. Now the issue of possible new standards goes to the city council. Last month, the council indicated it would like to see a new zoning district apply to the area between Duff and Grand Avenues, with the railroad tracks as its northern border and half a block south of Lincoln Way as its southern border. The city's hope is that new standards would eventually encourage redevelopment in the area, making it into a more urban district next to the Main Street area, with retail shops, restaurants, and entertainment businesses alongside some residential development. Many business owners in the area oppose new standards, which could render some properties non-conforming. New warehouse and vehicle service businesses would be prohibited, while current businesses would be allowed to continue operation. There was more in Thursday's Trib, including word that an Iowa State University tennis player has filed a Title IX and racial discrimination complaint against the university with the U.S. Department of Education. Erin Freeman alleges that she has been subjected to repeated acts of racial and sexual discrimination, that ISU representatives have created a hostile educational environment, and have enlisted other student-athletes in efforts to drive her out of the women's tennis program. An Iowa State spokesperson declined to comment. Still on the legal beat, the Trib reported that an Ames man who allegedly documented his sexual abuse of a 10-year-old girl has been indicted in U.S. District Court. 27-year-old Tyler Gene Harris is charged with the production, distribution, and possession of child pornography. The Trib also had word that Huxley Police Chief Mark Pote has announced his retirement, effective June 1st. Pote has served as Huxley's chief for nearly 15 years. The city council is working on a replacement plan. Also in Thursday's Trib, word that the Iowa Department of Agriculture reported that Iowa farmers have planted 65% of their corn crop, which is a few days ahead of their pace from last year. 26% of that crop has emerged. 33% of the soybean crop has been planted, and about 5% of that has emerged. Thursday's Trib also reported that Fairway Stores is celebrating its 80th anniversary this year with a new logo and even a new look for its employees. The store's official anniversary was May 12th. The store's logos will change gradually over the next few weeks and months, and customers will see new employee uniforms later this year. By the end of this year, Fairway will have 125 locations, and the company's chief operating officer said after all these years, there are no plans to have Fairway Stores open on Sundays. He said that by staying closed on Sundays, employees can spend time with their families. There was more in Thursday's Tribune, including word that for the second year in a row, a group of Ames Middle School students has come together to produce a publication of their own. The finished product, titled A Student's Voice 2018 Edition, was released last week. It runs 385 pages and features 25 short stories and 21 poems, all written and edited by 7th and 8th grade students. The Trib reported that 25 copies of the new publication had been sold. And there you have it, your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm KHOY Civic Reporter Dennis Hart, wishing you, as always, a happy, safe, and healthy weekend.
This is Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. Thank you, Dennis Hart, for bringing us the past week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. As Dennis mentioned in the news, last Tuesday, the ACLU of Iowa, Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, and Emma Goldman Clinic announced that they had filed a lawsuit to block the six-week Iowa abortion law that was recently signed by Governor Reynolds. They sued for temporary injunctive relief with the Iowa District Court for Polk County, stating, among other things, that the law will, quote, in practical effect, make it impossible for virtually all women to access abortion in Iowa, unquote. Here is an excerpt from their press conference hosted by Veronica Fowler, Communications Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, Rita Bettis, the ACLU of Iowa's legal director, Susanna DeBaca, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, Francine Thompson, co-director of Emma Goldman Clinic, and Alice Clapman, attorney for Planned Parenthood of America. Rita Bettis described the actions taken.
We have made these claims in state court, and we've argued under the Iowa Constitution, and we've presented our claims that this law violates the rights of Iowa women to access safe and legal abortion under the Iowa Constitution. And that's a right that they have to access safe and legal abortion free from unnecessary interference by the government. So that's what we're challenging. We've also made an equal protection claim under the Iowa Constitution and a fundamental rights type claim under the Iowa Constitution. We have asked the court to move quickly to set the matter for an expedited hearing so that that temporary injunction can be decided on before the law is due to take effect, which is July 1st. Alice, I'm not sure if you'd like to add to that at all.
The complaint presents the medical facts that this law will make safe and legal abortion virtually disappear in Iowa.
You're listening to a recording from a press conference held on Tuesday regarding the lawsuit against the recent 6-week abortion law in Iowa that was recently signed by Governor Reynolds. The question was also asked whether the Iowa Attorney General would be defending the state of Iowa in this case.
The Attorney General has, I think it was during our press conference, announced that he would not defend this unquestionably unconstitutional legislation. And from our perspective, that's an absolutely appropriate decision, given how clearly unconstitutional and indefensible it is.
Excerpts from a press conference that was held on Tuesday by the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, Emma Goldman Clinic, announcing that they were filing a lawsuit to block the 6-week Iowa abortion law that was recently signed by Governor Reynolds, saying that the Iowa Attorney General is refusing to defend the state of Iowa against this lawsuit. Looking forward to June 5th's primary election, Cal Halliburton interviews gubernatorial libertarian candidate Jake Porter. Here is Candidate with Cal.
It's our pleasure today to be talking with Mr. Jake Porter. Mr. Porter is running in the primary election to be held June 5th for the Libertarian Party nomination as a candidate for governor of Iowa. Jake was born in 1988 in Missouri. After living in a number of small towns, he graduated from high school at Lineville Clio Community High School in Iowa. Jake has an associate's degree and bachelor's degree in business administration from AIB College of Business. After joining the Libertarian Party of Iowa, Jake worked his way up from volunteer to chief of staff managing national campaign operations. He then managed Bob Barr's Iowa organization in his run for president. Following a stint as retail store manager, Jake entered the race for Iowa Secretary of State in 2010 and again in 2014. After the election, Porter didn't stop. He ended a job with Yahoo and became a self-employed business consultant. Jake and his colleagues built an organization that gave the Libertarian Party major party status in 2016, and in early 2017, he took an interim executive director job with the Libertarian Party of Iowa. Jake resigned that post and is now running as a major party candidate for governor of Iowa in the 2018 election. Jake, tell us something about you that we won't find on the internet or on your website.
Well, I don't like to mention it, but I do work in Omaha primarily, so that there can cause a little bit of controversy. No, I was retail store manager for Dollar General. Worked at Walmart. I've had a variety of retail jobs, and I did that off and on, you know, to keep in shape and everything. But I've now ended that so I can focus on the campaign. But that's instead of going to a gym like some people, I've done retail, you know, throwing trucks, running freight, you know, things like that.
I assume you've been doing a lot of travel. Well, as you talk with people across the state, what are their most frequent concerns?
You know, people, it's usually the same things that come up over and over again. Healthcare, they're concerned about the healthcare situation in Iowa. Privatization of Medicaid, they're concerned with mental health facilities closing, things that are very important to them. They're also concerned about the budget. You know, the state's not paying tax refunds on time. Why is that? Now, the state will tell us that they're doing this for security reasons. Interesting enough, you know, as State Treasurer Mike Fitzgerald says, the money's just not in the Treasury. They don't have the money to pay tax refunds on time. Things like that have people really concerned, and that was probably the primary reason I'm, you know, running for governor, is people were concerned about the budget issues we're having.
Well, let's assume you're elected. What are some specific actions you can take?
Well, the governor sets a recommended budget. Right now, they have a projected budget. I think what they do is they actually set their spending first, and then they make projections based on that because they get numbers that I have no idea where they come up with. If I tried to do that with my personal finances or my business, we'd go bankrupt. But they do that, and then it causes these mid-year budget cuts. So they've actually increased government quite a bit. It's about $1 billion since, you know, Terry Branstad took over in 2011 to what it was, you know, last year. They've increased the budget. But what there's a few things that the governor's office has done in the legislature, and one has been tax credits. They've given millions in tax refunds to big financially sound corporations while putting us with the tax bill. We could do away with those. There are some corporations in the state of Iowa, like the Research Activities Tax Credit, that are not even paying taxes. They're actually being cut a welfare check by the state of Iowa. That needs to end. The other thing the governor does is, like I said, they set a recommended budget. So they can go through and they can – there's a lot of stuff in that budget. Like there's things in the education budget that has nothing to do with education. There's promotion boards in there. There's a lot of pet projects that have been, you know, for decades that members of the legislature have added their pet projects. Well, they never get taken out. So it, you know, turns out the state of Iowa has over 300 government boards and agencies, many of which could be eliminated, consolidated, combined, or just plain made more efficient. And the state of Iowa, you know, does list some of this stuff on results, resultsiowa.gov, I believe is the website. And we could do more of that, looking into their recommendations that they've had, looking into each agency, seeing what is actually necessary for the government to do. And that way they can prioritize a little bit better and to stop these tax credits.
What are specific things we can do about the health care situation in Iowa?
Well, the privatization of Medicaid, there are people who think, oh, this is going to cut costs. Well, ultimately it doesn't, because the state of Iowa, they give, you know, contracts to basically big corporate interest at this point to take these over. It becomes cronyism, and then whenever they can't function, the state's going to bail them out. So it obviously is not going to save us any cost. It's only going to make the quality go down. It was a bad idea to begin with. We could reverse that, go back the way it was before, and then look for improvements. Now, as far as, you know, the mental health facilities, they never should have been closed. What this has done, this has been a drain on local resources, because it's not that the state's still not paying for this. It just now gets shifted over to things like our court systems. The local sheriff's offices now have to travel farther to take people, to transport people. This is a cost that maybe the state's not paying, but our local communities, particularly in rural Iowa, that are suffering and dying, continuously, they're being hurt really bad by this. Our rural communities are.
I think you mentioned something about education.
I may have. Education's always a big, important thing. I've actually asked a retired school teacher, if I win the primary, to be my lieutenant governor running mate, Lynn Gentry, out of Calhoun County. Education's pretty important. There's a lot of things that we can do. I think I'd mentioned there's things in the education budget that we could cut, because they have nothing to do with education. There's a lot of that, a lot of increased spending that we've had. You know, we used to be the number one in the nation for as far as education. Now we've dropped down to around 31. It's not good, and we've done it. We've increased spending, but we've not kept up. And a lot of that's we've increased spending on things like administration. We've taken, you know, control over what the local school districts were teaching and gave that in the hands of bureaucrats who probably don't know anything about educating kids. I don't claim to be a teacher or know what we need to teach, but there are people out there that do, and I would rather them make those decisions at the local level than someone uneducated on this, making the decisions that I know what's best for the local school districts when I sure obviously don't.
You mentioned that there were some things in the education arena that could be cut. Do you have some specific recommendations?
There are some boards on there, and even if you maybe move them somewhere else too, maybe not even necessarily cut them, but move them from the education. But let's see what education is going in there. There are some boards, you know, the entrepreneurs with disabilities boards, for example. There are things that you look at that public television's in the education budget, for example. I don't know if that necessarily be in the education budget. Things like that you look at, that we could get a better idea of what's actually being spent on education for the student. And, you know, the budget, if you look at the whole thing, is about 1,047 pages without getting into the sub-details of each agency. So there's all kinds of things in there that you can look, and you can – and part of it, I don't even know for certain what does, because they don't really give a description. You'd have to go in there and ask a lot of questions. What exactly does this do? And it maybe just, you know, $50,000 here, $100,000 there that goes to that, and you look to see, is this thing something we really need to keep? And it's a lot of these things add up.
The education budget has been increased, but it's been well below the rate of inflation, even though inflation has been low the last few years. The increase in the education budget hasn't kept up.
Well, and you can certainly make that that argument. There are things that we could do more efficient, especially with technology. If we're still teaching the same way we have back in the, you know, 1900s, early 1900s, we've not quite kept up, I think, with technology, too, that can cut costs. Now, that's one thing we can look at, though, and it's not so that I'm trying to just slash, you know, the education budget or anything else. I think we need to look at everything in that budget, you know, even what the governor has. Does the governor have a chef at Terrace Hill? That's one thing we could also look at as well. There's several things in there that we can probably make things a little bit better for our teachers and our students. Mm-hmm. And same thing with healthcare. You know, we have the Blue Cross Blue Shield owns a monopoly on healthcare in Iowa, you know, insuring government workers. Well, when they own a monopoly, when they have a monopoly, they can charge pretty much whatever they want. The state's going to pay it. And it's probably not a good idea for them to be able to, I don't know, donate $30,000 to former Governor Branstad's inauguration whenever he's the one who's making the contracts with him. A lot of things, and that's talking over $500 million right there just in insurance the state's paying. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that we need to look at. And
I'm going to shift gears and look at one of those things. Water quality has been something that a lot of folks have talked about. We've got 8,000 pools of poo all around the state with our over 8,000 confined animal feeding operations. That produces the equivalent of about 100 million people in population. What can we do about that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you talk to people from a lot of third world countries, bottled water, they have to have it, because if they don't, be very bad if they drink the water. That's where we're going to end up at, and that's not anything that any Iowan wants, rural Iowan, urban Iowan. No, it doesn't benefit anyone in this state. It doesn't benefit people in other states. So you have a right to do what you wish with your own land. You don't have the right to pollute and cause problems for anyone else. And a lot of this, I think, comes back to the government has propped up big corporations, and they've often given the benefits to big corporations too. And if you're causing pollution, if you're causing issues, that, yes, you should have to pay to clean it up. You shouldn't be allowed just to pollute at will just to make a higher profit for yourself.
So you're saying that in order to deal with those confined animal operations and the waste they produce, that we ought to hold the folks who operate them accountable for that amount of waste and what's happening to the environment as a result of it.
Yes. You have a right to do what you want, but you do not have a right to violate my rights and the rights of everyone else by polluting, by causing issues that's going to cost the whole state money and also going to impact our health pretty negatively at some point.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a shot at another one of those issues that comes up frequently, and that's immigrants in the state now. There are some folks who are suggesting regulations and policy that would basically close our state to immigration. What do you think of that?
I don't think the governor has any responsibility when it comes to immigration. I don't find any constitutional responsibility. I mean, what's the governor going to do? Are we going to put up, we're going to put up a National Guard on the border with Illinois to keep people out? Once somebody's in the United States, that's really not the governor's job to do anything about that. That would be a federal issue as far as I can see. And a lot of it's just talking points that people pander for donations and votes. Mm-hmm. And it can be very hateful. You know, I've worked with some of the places I've worked with, the majority of people who have immigrated here from Africa, from France, from all over the world, from Bosnia. And they can tell me the horror stories of how it was to get in the country. At some point, we've almost made it better to come in illegally just because we've put up so much red tape and barriers for people that want to work, people that are productive, people that do benefit our society. You think if we kicked every immigrant out, we would have fewer doctors, fewer scientists. It would be a real damage to the state of Iowa, and I don't think we want that. We were built on immigration. People came here from all over the world because, you know, as we put on the motto on our state flag, right? Our liberties we prize and our rights we will maintain. Mm-hmm. That's a great immigration campaign. We want people to come here because we value them.
So, in fact, even though there's no constitutional requirement for the governor to do anything with immigration, you would have the governor encourage immigration to the state?
Well, I think we should, and not just from other countries, but from other states as well. Once we get back to – we can be a shining example for other countries. Other countries and other states. We're Iowa nice. We have some of the nicest population you can find. There's a reason why I choose to live here. We have some of the best people, some of the brightest people.
What do you think of the push for an increase in the minimum wage?
And I don't think that's workable at all. The idea that the governor or someone else, they can arbitrarily set this wage that's going to work statewide, I think is ridiculous. I think it would drive people out of small towns, drive businesses out of small towns. If local governments want to set up a minimum wage, that's something they certainly have the ability to do. But at some point, you raise that too high and you're going to kill off the small towns that we've got. I don't think that's a good idea at all.
Another one of those issues that seems to be one that's difficult to deal with is illegal drugs. Not only the illegal drugs, also the excessive distribution of prescription drugs that is causing a lot of difficulty today. What do you propose to do with that?
Well, and I think we need to make sure that people are getting help whenever they have addiction issues. And one reason right now is that we prosecute people if we catch them with any type of drugs. We criminalize something that's really a mental health issue, and so people are afraid to come forward. They're afraid to say, you know, I'm an addict, because if they admit that, they risk being prosecuted, going to jail, losing their family, losing their jobs. And it's not just once you lose your job for something like that, you can get a felony. You can never find productive work again. Mm-hmm. And we've made that very difficult for a lot of people to integrate back into society. By doing that, there's been a huge unintended consequence that addicts are not able to get the help they need. So I would like us to go more towards treatment for addiction issues as opposed to we're just going to throw people in jail and we're mm-hmm. going to prosecute these things to the fullest extent. That's not worked. We've tried that. We've got people in the legislature and people in the governor's office that don't understand basic things, and they refuse to learn, I think. They think they know best to set polity, and it really hurts Iowans, mm-hmm. and it's created these problems that we're seeing today. If we could get people the help they need, that would be much better than prosecution.
It's been our pleasure to be talking with Mr. Jake Porter, who's running in the primary election to be held June 5th for the Libertarian Party nomination as a candidate for governor of Iowa. Thank you very much, Jake.
Thanks for having me on.
Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copeland. If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Colin Reichert is a science teacher at Ames High School and formerly at Ames Middle School. In 2016, Ames High student Lucas Vlily reported in the Ames High Web that Reichert spent his childhood in Bolivia, where he learned compassion and social consciousness by what he experienced growing up. Because of this, Vlily wrote, Reichert's curriculums don't only offer students opportunity to learn, but also to make a difference in society. This past year, Reichert taught 160 ninth grade students in six classes, Earth and Space Science at Ames High School. The classes included what he called community impact projects that provide a product or service to the community that do not exist or that could be needed or enjoyed. Listen closely to the projects that he and his students will describe here. You will hear invitations to some really fun events they plan to offer within the next few days. You may want to attend. KHOI reporter Cynthia McClure recorded this interview with Colin Reichert and some of his students.
My name is Colin Reichert. I'm an Earth and Space Science teacher at Ames High School, and I've been teaching there for 2 years. Before that, I was at the middle school for 5 years. The students that I'm working with are all freshmen taking Earth and Space Science, so this is ninth grade students. Projects we're working on kind of varies depending on the class. So I have six different sections of Earth and Space Science, and each section is doing a separate project.
How and why did this project come about?
Projects are part of a philosophy I have of education. It's project-based learning, where students investigate real, authentic needs in a community or desires of a community and do something with the curriculum that they're learning or have learned to apply it towards a project that would benefit the community. So there's no requirements to do this, and in fact, you often have to sacrifice some of the curriculum that the state standards might dictate, but it's something that I think is valuable. Our mission as a school district is to make sure that these students are prepared for taking action in society and not only being a part of the world out there, but shaping it as well.
Okay. Young adults, please come up, introduce yourselves and your project.
My name is Riley Schneider, and I'm in Mr. Reichardt's third period class. Our project is called LANDO, which stands for Ledges Astronomy Night Discovery Organization. It sounds long, but it's a cool acronym, so we went with it. We learned about the phases of Venus and about Galileo and how he proved that the Earth went around the Sun and the Sun didn't go around the Earth. Some people in our class are actually camping overnight, so it's just us, and we'll wake up at like 3 in the morning and we'll look at stars then. It's going to be tiring, but fun. And Friday the 18th, so this Friday, we're going to be at Ledges State Park at the Carl Fritz Shelter from 8:45 to 10:15. And so we're inviting the community to come over, and we'll have telescopes and that you can look at planets, and then we'll some students will explain star constellations and point out stars.
What was it like doing this project?
It was really fun because we got to do things that, like, when you plan an event, you see, like, adults do these things, but we had to do these things all by ourselves, and we had to communicate with each other, and we found out that planning an event is very stressful. It takes a lot to combine, like, a community to, like, one event, and it takes a lot of planning and communication with others. So you get to experience what it takes to work together as a team.
Hello, I'm Dominic Jones. I am the representative from Operation Astronomy. Our goal is to basically raise a bunch of money and donate that to a couple of areas in our community. One area is actually back to the high school so they can, like, improve technology. And then the other place that we want to donate the money is we actually want to go online and buy children's books and then donate those books to a children's hospital in Iowa City, so those kids don't just have to be bored. They can read and learn about, space. So we've split off into different groups doing a fundraiser. The first, and my favorite, is we're taking tin cans, poking constellations out of the end of them, and then we're painting them Jackson Pollock style, where we splatter paint them. I'm in charge of the painting of the cans, and that has just been phenomenal because it's really stress relieving, to be honest, because you just throw paint at cans. It's awesome. We did have some kids come by and make some cans too, and that was fun, and I learned that those kids really like those cans.
That's great.
And then we're actually selling them to just people in the community for $2 a can, or you can get three of them for $6 and get a free flashlight with it too. So the deals, they're not bad deals. You can get more commonly known constellations like the Big and Little Dipper, things like that.
How can people contact you if they're interested in getting a constellation can?
We are having an event to showcase the students' work from lots of these projects at the Ames Public Library, May 25th from 6:30 to 8 o'clock, and that's open to the general public. Dominic's project with the tin cans will be showcased there.
Another thing our class is doing is having baked goods to support the event on May 25th. You can get these baked goods at Fairway May 19th from 10 to 2. There's another event coming up May 26th, which is the day after the public event at the library. We're going to have space domes where you can just go in, and it's like you're looking at the night sky, but it doesn't have to be at night. So unlike cloudy nights or winter nights, you can look in these space domes, and it's cool.
What are they made out of?
Unused trash bags, construction plastic.
That sounds very eclectic and interesting, actually. So construction plastic, and you poke holes, and you basically look out like it's a constellation?
Yeah, so these domes were actually made by a former Ames High School teacher, Jack Troger. And he made them back, I think, in the 90s. And I've used them with students, and students for their project wanted to share it with other people in the public, in particular younger kids. The science department has used them since the 1990s.
So, but you want to share them with the community?
These guys do, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very nice of you guys to do that. What did you learn about science?
I learned that there are so many more constellations than you think there are. Like, everyone's so concerned about the Big and Little Dipper and Orion, mostly just his belt.
Well, they're easily seen.
That's true. There's all these other cool ones that, like, you can see, but they just aren't as well known. You know what I mean?
And you're going to share that information on the cans?
Yeah.
Wonderful. The HOPE Project.
The HOPE Project, which stands for Housing Our People, was made by a foster youth in our community because she wants to have a home after she leaves the foster care system, and she wants other foster youth to have homes after they leave. So we're basically designing a tiny house in our class.
What was it like doing these projects?
I would have to say it was really eye-opening because I didn't realize there was such a big need for this. There's so many kids walking our halls, and you don't even realize that they don't have anywhere to go. They don't have a home, and they won't have one after they graduate. So it was really eye-opening to see that there are people in need. Meeting with community experts to talk about homelessness in our community was something I'm going to remember forever. There's always a way you can help, and it's really not that hard to dedicate some of your time to helping, like, your community. And also, just tiny houses in general, they really intrigue me, so probably something I'm going to look into later, too.
What did you learn about science through this project?
So the science aspect of this project was to make them eco-friendly and, like, passive solar designs.
I'm Amara Ogba.
The Prairie Protection Project.
I'm a part of the Prairie Protection Project, also known as P-Cubed. Our goal is basically to preserve the prairie that lays behind the Ames High School. We want to preserve the prairie for future generations of students to use for education and also to educate the community about erosion.
Can you describe that prairie behind the high school, what it looks like?
It's actually a very large prairie. It starts off as just maybe grassland, and it goes off into larger forests, and there's rivers that run through. One part of our project is actually rocking the river and seeing how we can handle the flow to reduce the erosion.
So it's hydrology you're dealing with.
In this project, basically, it was focused a lot around erosion and ways to prevent it, such as certain structures that we can build to prevent water flow. And also, even though it may not exactly be science, basically preparing the area for the community too, and like setting sit spots around the prairie so that we can let people sit and kind of take in the nature. Our class invited some fifth grade students from Fellows, and basically they helped us with rocking the river and planting plants for a certain prairie area. And really it was just kind of fun bringing other students that will soon be us freshmen and having them just like help us with the prairie.
So these were younger junior high school students?
Fifth graders.
What was it like doing this project?
I think I found it very interesting for me. Being outside was something way different than what I've done in all my other previous science classes. So it was really just a different experience that I really enjoyed.
What did you learn about the community from this project?
What I learned from the community is basically walking around the prairie and stuff. When we go down into the deeper parts, we can see what I kind of found interesting was the trash people leave behind in the prairie, just kind of like plastic bags and like old like materials. And you just kind of see how, even though our job is to preserve these prairies, we see how people just leave stuff behind and how easy it would be if people just picked up their trash and helped us preserve the prairie. We would like to invite the community to a project showcase at the prairie of Ames High School at May 24th from 6 p.m. to 7:30, where we will just be presenting our information and the prairie itself.
I'm Pragul Siva, and I'm a freshman. My project is in our period is about astronomy book for children. It's for kindergartners to through second graders. It's a story about a character named Max going to space, teaching those planets and learning from them. He's basically bullied in his real life, so he's really sad, so he dreams of going to that planet. This improves interest for those children.
What was it like doing this project?
It was really fun. We collaborated with other groups. We divided into separate groups and we just helped each other.
What did you learn about science?
I mean, I learned and all of us learned more about astronomy and space, about planets.
What did you learn about being in the community?
Really happy. I don't know.
So you're happy that you get to share this with the community?
My name is Gabe Greenlee. I am a freshman at Ames High. For our class period's projects, we painted multiple murals. One of the murals is to spark interests in astronomy, and the other mural is to showcase the diversity in the science community. And the third mural is on a big piece of cloth that you can roll out and like take to different schools in different areas to represent the distances and proportions in between the planets. We are having an event at Ames Public Library on May 25th at 6, and you can come see what it's all about.
Where are these murals located that you painted?
They are on plywood, and then one of them is on a big piece of cloth, so they can easily be moved around the community and taken to multiple places.
What was it like doing these projects, or this project?
I thought it was pretty cool working with other people. The project in general has just been a really fun experience for me. Not just learning about science, but also working with people in my class. I was making new friends, and I just had a lot of fun doing it.
What did you learn about science doing this?
One thing that really stuck out to me was the actual two-scale replicas of the distance between, say, the Earth and the Moon, or the solar system in general, and the distances in between two places in space and how big it really is was pretty fascinating, I thought.
What did you learn about the community through this event?
I think it's cool that just us, what we're doing, even if it's little, if it can change someone, if it can impact someone's life and make them want maybe a career in space and science or want to learn more about astronomy, I think it's cool that you can change someone's entire outlook on that stuff.
Colin, what did you learn?
I have 160 students. Trying to keep them all working productively towards something is a really big challenge. Trying to adequately give the kind of feedback that these kids deserve is challenging. But definitely community impact projects are something that I'm not going to abandon. People in the community aren't necessarily used to working this closely with students, but it is a vision of the type of world I want to live in where youth are actively involved in doing good for the community, and I think that's a vital piece of what schools should do. I really value what students can gain from these types of projects, in particular partnering with experts in the community and welcoming people to work with students. A lot of people in the community, I think, are willing to do that and relish the opportunities to work with students.
Will this project be repeated next year?
It'll be a more limited scope next year. I will do that with some of the classes I teach next year, but I do not think I'm going to be doing it with all the classes that I teach next year because we have a big freshman class coming in.
So train the freshmen to be good scientists and stewards so that they can basically run with the project as they grow as they get older.
Sure. We'll still be doing projects of some sort, but I don't know if it'll be on this scale.
Describe an experience that you will always remember doing this Earth and Space Science event at Ames High School.
This happened yesterday, and I think I'll remember it. My seventh period invited Elise Wright's class from Fellows, a phenomenal teacher in the district, retiring this year, and being able to work with her and her students and see my students act as mentors was really an enjoyable experience.
High school students mentoring fifth graders.
Right, on how to manage stormwater runoff from our school.
That is great. I love that.
I could have cried. I didn't, but it was beautiful to see.
You guys are so awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Colin Reichert, Ames High science teacher, and some of his ninth grade students who participated in his Earth and Space Science class. They were interviewed by KHOI reporter Cynthia McClure. You've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Before we end today, just a few calls of spring from the natural world. At this time in May, mourning doves are doing their mating calls, the orioles are laying eggs, pheasants' eggs are beginning to hatch, and the bobolinks are returning. Take a listen. The mourning doves, the orioles, the pheasants, and the bobolinks. But you don't really need KHOI to hear those birds, do you? You pretty much can just put your head out the window. In any case, this has been Local Talk, which airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Also remember that you can hear a recording of this show later on today online at khoifm.org. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. We also heard Appalachian Spring from Aaron Copland. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, come on down, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. We can always use reporters. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun every Saturday, located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza. The farmers market brings fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment.